Hello everyone and welcome to episode 37 of season 1 Reading with Grace, where we will continue reading The Unwanted's Island of Fire. Today we will be picking up from chapter 64, but first a quick recap of chapters 59 through 63. Everything that's been happening in Artemis lately was explained to Sam and Lonnie, and they both took the news pretty hard, especially Lonnie with her mother. Aaron is worried about the strange things he's heard about Gondolieri Rat Trap, and that his following is slowly diminishing. When he looked out of his hole of the wall to the sea, he saw a large ship coming towards the island and began panicking. Alex and his crew safely returned home to Artemis, and although Alex was injured, he refused to be put in the hospital ward, instead to be in his own room. When he got to his room, he collapsed from pain and sickness. Meanwhile, Clive thought he had died. Simba crashed through Alex's door to carry him to Mr. Today's quarters so he could be cared for in private, and the cat never left Alex's side. That's the end of the summary. Enjoy the episode! While Alex slept. Simba remained by Alex's side, waiting for him to wake up. Alex moaned and muttered, shouted and cried in his unconscious state. He fought battles with Quill and Warbler over and over, and he fought imaginary battles that had never happened, or perhaps that were still to come. Day after day, he lost Simba to the sea, Mr. Today to the spell, Lonnie and Sam to the silence, and Skye to his stupidity. In the days while Alex slept, Gunnar Haluki and Claire Morning felt well enough to leave the hospital ward. They began to get some fresh air and exercise, and Claire even took Gunnar for a ride in her boat. Claire also began teaching again, and in the evening she and Gunnar spent hours and hours in the Museum of Large, combing through Mr. Today's books on healing. Whatever she could find, she brought to Karina and Henry, and they shared them with the other nurses, and all of them spent many long evenings, with books sprawled out over a table in the dining room. One day Miss Morning appeared via Blackboard, inviting residents with science skills who were interested in being on the healing team to join her. "It's about time we improved our skills in this area," she said, her face glowing again and her honey blonde hair shining on blackboards everywhere. "We never needed extensive knowledge in medical spells before, but ever since the battle with Quill, it has become obvious that Artemis is sorely lacking in this department. If you feel especially gifted in this area, please find me in the dining room most evenings from 7 to 9. It was good for her to keep her mind busy after all she'd been through, but every now and then she closed her eyes and thought about Liam and what life might be like if she'd chosen her over his blind allegiance to the broken government. He was on the verge of coming around. She could feel it those last days in Gunnar's house. Maybe Liam had a heart in there somewhere, but that he'd been willing to tie her up and keep her in a closet, that was something she'd never be able to forgive. People who care about each other don't hurt each other and make each other feel small. Period. End of sentence. It was obvious that Liam's problem was much bigger than just feeling like he had to obey a high priest who was doing some terrible things. He wasn't the man she'd always hoped he'd be, and that was sad. She sighed and dove into her work, trying desperately, among other things, to find something that would help poor Alex. Henry's magical stitches were an extraordinary creation. Lonnie was soon able to hobble around, and her slashed thigh was healing quickly. She moved back to her room upstairs, too, leaving the hospital wing empty again. But no one knew how to make it disappear again except Alex, so it remained. One day, Miss Octavia removed the hospital wing's wooden doors and created new ones made of stained glass, designing a beautiful portrait of Mr. Today on the lawn in all its brightly colored glory. Below, she etched a tribute, "In loving memory of the heart and soul of Artemis, Marcus Today." By the end of the first day, more than 100 tokens of love had been placed in front of the portrait from all the imaginable sorts of residents. Piles of acorns, potted flowers, seashells, as well as dozens of poems, stories, drawings, songs, scripts, and crafts. Megan stood for a long while staring at the new picture. Then she pulled from her pocket a tiny music box and set it on the floor at the mage's feet. In the days while Alex slept, Megan spent extra time in the music room retraining her voice. One day she invited Skye to join her, thinking Skye had the most beautiful, husky, soulful voice she'd ever heard in someone near her own age. But while Skye appreciated the offer and agreed to sit in the room and listen to Megan, she didn't want to sing. "I'm not creative like you," she said, her face growing warm. Megan turned away from her music stand to look at the girl. "Of course you are. I don't sing or draw or act or play an instrument. I can't make things." Megan tilted her head. "That's not what creative means, you know," she said kindly. "Creativity is in everything. Even the people of Quill are creative, but they'd be horrified to call that." "They are?" But I thought they got rid of you guys because of that. Megan tapped her lips with her forefinger. You know, I've been thinking a lot about that. Mr. Today once said that Justine was afraid of people who might not follow directions blindly. And someone, somewhere along the way, Justine probably, decided that the kind of people who got caught being creative were bad. The ones who hid it didn't get sent to their deaths. And it's so sophomoric, she mused, trying to note a new word she learned as her thoughts came together. Because she valued the people who could write, but she didn't want very many of them, because they would be a threat to her. And when you think about the Quillitary, those people make armor and work on vehicles and plan attacks, and that's all creative, but it's the kind of creative that furthers the goals of Quill. She ended on a triumphant note, excited to have made this connection. Like Aaron, he's very creative. He figured out that whole favored farm thing. Remember where we stole food from when Artemy was gone? Skye nodded. He designed that. But see, his creativity helps advance the goals of Quill, and ours doesn't. That's the difference.
So, Alex's brother doesn't think he's creative?
He doesn't want to be, because Quill turned creative into a bad word, and it's not a bad word. Megan shook her head. What a way to mess with our minds. It's amazing we don't need a psychiatrist.
What's that?
Megan laughed. Oh, I don't know. There was a psychiatrist in one of Mr. Appleblossom's plays, but we don't have them here. He said it's a brain doctor who asks weird questions about your mother or something.
Skye sucked in a breath.
Megan clapped a hand to her mouth.
Oh, Skye, your mother, she said. I'm sorry.
She didn't know what else to say. She remembered Alex's promise to rescue the woman, but now, with him so ill, she wasn't sure what was going to happen.
It's okay, Skye whispered. But, I need to go. I think I have something.
She hurried out of the room, Megan following her after a moment, then stopping and pounding a fist against her forehead. Skye ran to the shore where she could be alone. She sat down near the edge of the water and stretched out her legs so that the surf could rush under her heels and let them sink into the sand, anchoring her there. She looked to the west, where Warbler stood, and then beyond it, straining her eyes for Pirate Island, and finding it in the distance, marked by the spray that crashed against the side of what they now knew what was a volcano. Her mother's face danced before her, and she felt a numbness creep over her body as she tried to forget about her mother being pulled away by that pirate, like he was threatening her, hurting her. And even though her mother had insisted that there was no way to rescue her, Skye couldn't help but think there had to be something she could do. It was more than a wish. It was her duty. And time, too much time, was slipping by without any word from Alex about going back there. Soon, Skye knew, she'd have to do something. But something kept her waiting for Alex, wherever he was. In the water in front of her, the pirate ship floated, and she wondered what would happen if an entire ship of people got stuck in the volcanic drain. Would they drown? Would the ship stay afloat and come back out again once the volcano had been filled? Or would the ship get pulled into a different place, where the pirates could collect the goods and people from it? She remembered how elaborate the reverse aquarium had been. A full garden meant they had to get seeds and dirt from somewhere, and the play area for the children. How could they have built that without supplies? There must be a way in and out. After all, her mother ended up in there somehow, and so did all the pirates and people. Skye lifted her face to the sun and wondered if Alex really meant it that he helped her go back and save her mother. He'd obviously been avoiding her ever since they returned, and maybe that was why. She hadn't seen him anywhere. Granted, she'd heard he was pretty bruised still, but it had been days and days since they returned, and he wasn't in the hospital ward, so he must not be too badly hurt. She drew a heart in the sand with her finger and then quickly wiped it away. Alex had made it clear that he wasn't interested in her like that, even though she was certain he'd enjoyed the kiss. But it wasn't meant to be. After a moment, she got to her feet and looked around at the beautiful grounds, her eyes stopping at the jungle and its trees and vines everywhere. With a grim smile, she set out for it. In Quill, while Alex slept, Aaron demanded the wall be put back up again, and when it was back up, all Aaron could do was think about how he couldn't see anything, and what if someone was sneaking up on them right now? He lasted a day with the wall in place again before he demanded to be taken down once more, this time making it a window up off the ground rather than a door, so that anyone coming up the hill from the outside would have trouble trying to get in through it without help. Aaron assigned two guards to stand in front of it at all times, peering out, and then he fired them, not trusting anyone to watch for things as competently as Aaron could do himself. And so it was that Aaron became quite decidedly obsessed with being attacked by outsiders, so much so that he spent many sleepless nights crawling up to the window and watching for enemies.
The 8th day.
In the dark of the night on the 6th day after their return to Artemy, Alex opened his eyes for a little less than a minute.
He stared at the ceiling, unable to focus, and then he closed his eyes again. Over the course of the seventh day, he opened his eyes a few more times, but it was too hard to keep them open. When light beckoned from the other side of his lids on the eighth day, Alex's body finally decided it was ready to emerge from its cocoon. His eyelids fluttered and then opened. He squinted, having no idea where he was or why there was so much sunlight in his room, when he didn't remember having a window. Slowly, he turned his head to look around. It seemed like his room anyway, all his things were there, but it was so much bigger than his room, which was extremely puzzling. "Where am I?" he croaked, his throat dry. There was a noise behind him, and soon Simber's body and face rose before him. "Hey, Sim," he said, and then he frowned. "How'd you get in here?"
"Alex," Simber said.
The cat peered at him. His nostrils flared, and then he smiled.
"Welcome back. You're in your new room now."
Alex blinked. "What?" He took a deep breath, feeling muted pain and everything flooded back to him. "What time is it? I didn't mean to sleep so late. I have a ton of stuff to do." He tried to ease up into his sitting position, but gave up after a few seconds, totally spent. Simber told him everything that had happened, how Clive had called for help, how Simber had slammed through the door and walls and destroyed Alex's room, how he'd found Alex collapsed on the floor, and how they brought Alex here to the mage's living quarters and made it his own.
"From what Claire can tell you, you bruised several ribs and probably fractured some too. How does it feel to breathe?"
"It hurts if I take a deep breath, but not as bad as it did. How long have I been here? Did I sleep a whole day and another night?" he asked, incredulous. "I've never slept that long in my life."
"Today is the eighth day since we came back from Warbler," Simber said.
Alex's eyes opened wide.
"Whoa," he said.
And then a cloud passed over his face, and he tried once more to sit up. "Oh no," he said. "I have so much..."
"Relax, Alex," Simber said.
He pressed a cold paw gently on Alex's chest.
"You have to get well first. Everything is fine here. We are all pitching in. Claire and Gunnar are back to normal. Lonnie is too. Artemy is once again a well-oiled machine."
Alex sank back into his pillows. "So Lonnie?"
"Fine."
"Megan?"
"Fine."
"Karina?"
"Fine. They're all fine."
"Even," he blushed. "Never mind."
"She's fine, too."
Alex put his hands over his eyes and tried to hide his dumb grin. "Ugh," he said. "The cat knows all. The cat knows all. When are you going to get that into your thick skull, so?" He stood his head slowly, furious with himself for being so obvious. "Stop looking at me," Simber snorted. Alex peeked out from around the side of his hand. Simber was looking pointedly at the wall where Clive hung, though the blackbird's face had yet to make an appearance. Simber chuckled to himself. Alex's blush faded, and he hastily changed the subject. "Where are all Mr. Today's things?"
"Packed in a giant chest in the Museum of Large. It's all there for you whenever you want to go through it. Oh, except for this."
He turned his head suddenly and patted to the side of the enormous room.
"We found it on the dressing table. It has your name on it."
Simber brought him a book, setting it on the bed.
"It looks like he meant to give it to you before he planned to leave on his holiday."
Alex picked it up. The corners of his mouth rose a fraction as he read his name in Mr. Today's handwriting. He removed the note and looked at the book, reading the title. "The Triad. Live, Hide, Restore." His mouth dropped open. He paged through the third section and read a few sentences. "You've got to be kidding me," he said. He looked up. "Is this a joke?" Simber shook his head.
"Why?"
"The restore spell. It's right here," he quoted. "Wearing a robe, stand on the back stoop of the gray shack near the gate. Say the words, imagine, believe." Alex snapped the book shut and let his head fall back on the pillow, not even sure how he was feeling. "Seriously," he muttered, staring dumbfounded at the ceiling. "Seriously, Mr. Today? You couldn't have handed this to me an hour earlier?" Simber ducked his head.
It's not funny, Alex warned. There is nothing funny about this. Simba lowered his head further, his neck shaking.
Don't even, Alex said, disgusted.
He threw the book at the wall, which didn't quite have the velocity to hit it, seeing as how Alex was so pathetically weak. It flopped to the floor. Alex stared at it, shaking his head, and then he pressed his lips together to keep them from twitching.
You are a bad, he said with a little hiccup. Bad cat.
He tried to breathe slowly, but soon he was trembling.
Ow, he said between laughs.
Ow, seriously, you're killing me, man. He snickered and winced. Simba was laughing so hard the bed shook. When at last the shaking stopped, Alex was sore and exhausted, but there was also something huge missing from his life.
So, he said, you got any food in this fancy place?
Within a few days, Alex was walking around his room with a cane that Henry and Crow had carved for him and set along with Simba. Those who could access the secret hallway to visit did so, updating him on everything that was going on and bringing him more and more flowers and gifts as the days passed on, and word got out that he'd been badly injured and had been recovering all this time. But he never heard from Sky. He began to puzzle over Sky and Crow's mother rescue, knowing that it would be very difficult. Late in the evenings, he would scratch out notes and sketches, ideas of how to do it. But he found flaw after flaw in all of them, but each scrapped plan made him more determined to find out the perfect way to succeed. On one visit by Miss Octavia, he questioned her quite thoroughly about everything he could think of regarding the sea, and came away with even more thoughts that churned inside his head, trying to turn into real ideas. The only thing he needed was time for his subconscious to sort them all out. When he was able, Alex began to walk and move around as much as he could in the secret hallway, gaining his strength back, calling on his muscles to work and grow again. Sam Hee came by every now and then. He wore a pained expression whenever Alex asked him about Lonnie, but Sam Hee never admitted they were always together, and Alex pretended not to know, though from the big picture window he'd seen them wandering the grounds holding hands. As boring as things were hanging around his room all day, it gave Alex a bit of persevered pleasure to see Sam Hee feeling uncomfortable about it. Alex had accepted it by now, and he wasn't sad. He and Lonnie had always felt more like friends anyway, and he thought it would be pretty easy to just be that again. Whenever he thought about Sky, though, his chest ached. It was like her heart was inside him, pressing against his cracked ribs. It was probably good that he hadn't seen her in a while, though he longed to. Better to get her out of his head, but when he closed his eyes at night, he could feel her cool, spongy lips pressing against his, and his stomach flopped inside him. "You have to stop," he said one day, covering his face with his hands. There was no place for romance when one was the head mage, was there?
"You know," Simba remarked on one occasion as they played a hand of cards. "Marcus was alone because he was still married to his wife, Claire's mother. He always hoped she'd come live here. He tried to convince her many times, but she refused. Still, he waited. Just in case. Because he loved her."
Alex flushed. He didn't know what to say, but the word slipped in, creating a sliver of hope. "She never came?"
"No."
"Is she still living in Quill?" Alex sat up curious.
"No. She was sent to the ancient sector a few years ago."
It seemed there was a lot about Mr. Today that Alex didn't know, but he learned something new, and maybe one day there was hope. Sadly, he ruined things with Sky by now. He hadn't even sent her a message or anything all this time, even though he knew she was dealing with her mother's situation. He hadn't even asked her how she was doing. And it was too late now. It would look like an afterthought. Better to talk to her in person once he was back to normal. But still, every day he walked to the window at the end of the not-very-secret hallway and looked out, wondering if he could see her. One day, finally, he did. She was coming from the jungle, walking toward the shore, doing her very best to balance a freshly made raft on her back. Alex's cane clattered to the ground. '66. A Fight. Alex moved toward the balcony as fast as his feet could carry him, which wasn't very fast at all. He grabbed the railing and leaned against it as he maneuvered down the steps, trying not to jolt his body any more than he had to. But he had to reach her in time. Simba and Florence looked on in surprise at the sight of him dodging other students and residents like a decrepit grandfather on ice skates. They peppered him with questions as he reached the bottom and sped for the door, but Alex ignored them, whipping open the door and stepping outside for the first time in weeks. He shielded his eyes from the sun and scanned the shore, spotting her.
Sky! He cried. He hastened toward her as he dropped the raft in the water, pushing it deeper. She placed a small satchel on top of the raft and climbed on. Sky! He yelled again, and this time she turned her head. Her eyes widened in alarm. Alex stopped at the edge of the water and stared at her. She held his gaze as the raft drifted in front of him, heading west. Where was she going? Alex didn't know what to say, what to do. Everything inside him crumbled. She was leaving Artemis. She was leaving him. And what was he supposed to do? Watch her go? The only part of her that moved was her head, turning slowly to hold his gaze as she drifted farther away. The water reflected sunlight that shimmered on her skin, her face, and all its stillness. She was a statue of a girl on a raft, breaking a boy's heart after he broke hers. Waves of emotion surged through Alex. She had to come back! He saw her, she saw him, but now she could come back. But she didn't. Her raft rolled and dipped over a wave, and she drifted farther out to sea. Finally, she made a fist tap to her chest and held her hand out at Alex. And then she turned around, lying on her stomach at the corner of the raft, using her arms to paddle. Stop! Alex yelled. Don't leave! He could see her expression anymore. Please! He shouted, but she didn't react. Alex couldn't stand it. She was going away. She didn't even say goodbye, and she wouldn't be coming back. She'd never make it. He couldn't hesitate any longer. Sky! He yelled one last time. And then, despite his pain, despite the weakness, he kicked off his shoes and started running recklessly into the waves. When the water reached his chest, he dove in, swimming like his life depended on it. On shore, he didn't know a crowd had gathered until they began cheering. Simba and Florence had followed him outside, and now Simba growled and stood up, ready to chase after Alex and pull him from the water. Florence held him back. Don't, she said. Not just yet.
He'll drown. We can't risk it again.
He won't drown. Florence didn't take her eyes off the boy. Watch, she's looking back.
More and more people gathered to see what was happening, and when they found out, they began cheering Alex on too. After a minute, a chant started. Sky, come back! Sky, come back!
Sky stopped paddling and sat up. She stared at the crowd, and then she stared at Alex and started yelling at him.
What in the world are you doing? Are you insane? Go back!
Alex couldn't answer. It was all he could do to breathe and focus on not drowning. He plowed forward, telling himself to let the pain roll off him. She stared dumbfounded.
Alex, I mean it. Go home. I have to leave. I have to save my mother. I'm sorry, but I can't just let her stay there.
Alex was gaining on the raft, and now he heard the cheering behind him, but he couldn't afford to look back.
What about Crow?
He sputtered through each knife-stabbing breath, barely getting the words out.
You said you'd never leave him.
He'll be safe with you. I know that. I can't take him with me. I can't risk his life again, now that he's finally happy.
Alex had to slow down to catch his breath. He flipped over onto his back and began kicking, his chest heaving, his breath coming out in gasps of air and pain. When he could speak, he said, I can't let you risk yours.
You big jerk, she cried. Why are you doing this to me? With an enormous effort, Alex flipped back onto his stomach and pushed himself forward with all he had left.
Why are you letting me?
He took one more gasp of air.
Drown, he said.
He fell underwater and was forced to flip to his back again. He managed a cheeky smile as he lunged through the water and reached for the corner of the raft. The crowd on the shore cheered.
Get off!
Alex obeyed. He sank under the water. The crowd gasped.
Very funny,
she said, but her voice wasn't sound as confident as before. Alex swam under the raft and popped up on the other side. When Sky leaned over to see where he'd gone, he pushed up and yelled.
Bah!
She screamed in terror and grabbed the edge, but the momentum was there and she fell into the water. The bag she carried plopped in after her. That's about when Alex remembered the people from Warbler didn't know how to swim. A promise. She came back above the water, sputtering and coughing.
Help!
She yelled, real fear in her voice as the raft drifted out of her reach. She was flailing so much she was dousing herself. Alex dove back under the raft in an instant and grabbed around her waist, pushing her up above the surface and holding her there, even though she grabbed two fistfuls of his hair and yanked. The crowd cheered.
I hate you, she sputtered.
I hate you too, he said. He watched her chest heave with panic. He felt her stomach muscles clench against his chest. He directed their bodies sideways, reaching out an arm to catch the raft again.
Here, grab on. I'm sorry. I forgot you can't swim.
You're awful. I know. She gripped his hair and looked him in the eye, her lips a white line.
I need to get her out of there, she said.
Alice looked up at her face, treading water and slowly, almost unnoticeably, pulling the raft toward home. "Don't you think you should learn how to swim first?" She glared at him. "I could find someone to teach you," he offered. "I am the leader of Artemy, you know."
"You are insufferable."
"Only around you."
"How would you know?" she spat back at him. "You never are."
She clenched her legs around the back and squeezed. He grimaced and his hand slipped from the raft. Her weight on him forced him underwater, where he screamed out of pain. He pushed his hands upward and lunged for the raft once again, grabbing it with the tips of his fingers. He blew out a wet, staggered breath and readjusted his grip on her. His lungs burned. She looked away.
I'm sorry, she said. I didn't know you were still hurt. All this time I thought you were a jerk instead of being merely inconsiderate.
She let go of his hair and reached out for the raft, just barely grasping it, and pulled it closer, pushing herself up on her elbow to help.
I'll climb back on here.
No, he said. Stay here in the water. Please. I'm sorry. You're right. I was a jerk. She looked into his eyes, so brown and earnest.
You're just like being like this to get me to come back with you, she said, setting her jaw.
Alex tilted his head, about to protest, but then he changed his mind.
You know what? He asked. So what if I am? I'm not afraid to say that I care about you, and I don't want you to die. And yes, I want you to come back to Artemy with me. So I'm not just being like anything but me. And the truth right here, just you and me and no hiding on top of roofs or in private ship stairwells, and no giant cat hovering overhead? The truth, Sky, is that I think about you all the time. And when I'm not with you, I miss you. And I feel like we have this, I don't know, connection or whatever. And maybe that's because all we went through restoring Artemy. But I don't know, you know? You're the one I broke down in front of that first night on the roof, and I hardly even knew you. You're the one I went to when I needed somebody smart to help me solve things.
He was out of breath. He winced and pulled himself up, lurching to get a new grip on the raft.
The problem is, I just don't know what to do, because there will be a lot of times where I'm plastered with all the messes that the magical world makes. And I guess that's a lot, I don't know. All I have is what I've experienced so far, and this job about killed me. So I don't know exactly what or how much I'd have left or whatever over for someone.
He swallowed hard, and his foot brushed the sandy bottom.
But the one thing I do know is that I'm not just saying this to get you to come home, is that I told you on the ship that I would help you get your mother out of there, and I meant it. I meant it then, and I mean it now. And I'm sorry it's taken me so long to get healthy, and I'm 50 times sorrier I didn't let you know what I was thinking about. And you. But if we do this pirate island rescue, we need to do it right, and there's no way I'm going to break into an underwater pirate island with a team of people who can't swim, because that would be stupid, and we are not stupid.
Sky was quiet, and then she gently draped her arms around his neck and hugged him. He closed his eyes, digging his foot into the sandy floor on the sea. When he turned to see just how many witnesses he'd had to his latest spectacle, the beach was strangely empty.
You can touch the bottom here, Alex said, loosening his grip so she could slide down to her feet.
Come home with me?
Sky nodded. Stay until we're ready to crush the pirates and live to tell about it?
Okay, she said. He cast a sidelong glance at her as they slugged through the shallow waves in their wet clothes.
Promise?
She grabbed his forearm and almost tripped over her own feet.
Promise, she said, laughing.
Alex caught her and laughed.
Ow, you're seriously killing me now.